So we now have Michael Duff and his answers to all the questions. Are you ready for the first question?
Yes.
So the first question is by Mr. Sopenko.
Nikita Sopenko, ITAP Moscow. So, in your lecture, you mentioned that that condensed matter analogous M2 brain ending on M5 brain is a 3 plus 1 dimensional superconductor. Could you explain this point? I mean, what phenomena are similar to these models?
Five brains, is that correct?
Yes.
Can you put up your hand? I can't see.
I'm here.
Oh, hello. The short answer is no. But let me give you a longer answer. This is a slide that Witten showed in his talk at Strings 2015 in Bangalore on Monday, which I downloaded from the internet. And he was talking about the systems that we were talking about. Majorana fermions, in his case, in three dimensions. And he said that such equations also show up in the theory of these hypothetical, as he said, topological superconductors. And he was remarking on the similarity of the problems that the high-energy physicists and the condensed matter physicists are asking. For different reasons, they come across the same question, which is whether this system is consistent. And it seems that they both arrive at the conclusion that in general it isn't, unless the number of Majorana fermions is a multiple of 16. Well, I wish I knew the answer to that. I think it's to do with Can you hear me now? Yeah. I think it's to do with the fact that there's an index associated with this Majorana fermion in three dimensions, and it has to take on multiples of 16. In order for the partition function to be well-defined. Now, why 16 from some deep philosophical point of view, I don't know, but that's what the calculation gives him. And it turns out the condensed matter theorists arrived at the same conclusion from a different perspective. Now, the question was, how does this fit in with M theory? And this, I confess, came to me as a surprise that Witten should have put these two together. But he claimed that what made him think about this problem, as opposed to the condensed matter theorists, was a problem in M theory. M theory is an 11-dimensional theory which unifies all the five 10-dimensional string theories and also incorporates brains as well as strings. And it's the best candidate we have for a unified theory of gravity and quantum mechanics. It's not yet proved its worth in particle physics, but we live in hope. These M theory, which lives in 11 dimensions, has a brains In particular, it has a two-brain. That's an object with two spatial and one time dimension. And it has a five-brain, which is like its magnetic dual. Because just as an electrical particle couples to a vector field, and a string couples to a second-rank antisymmetric tensor field, a membrane couples to a field with three antisymmetric indices. So its field strength will have four indices. And in 11 dimensions, four is dual to seven. So the object that's dual to the membrane will couple to a six-dimensional potential, and that's a five-brain. So the five-brain is like the magnetic monopole, as the membrane is the electric monopole in a higher dimension. Space-time dimension, 11 space-time dimension. Four real that we know, seven extra. Now, one feature of these membranes is that they can end on five brains. There was already known an analogous phenomenon in 10-dimensional string theory where open strings can end on brain, D brains. This is the 11-dimensional ancestor of this 10-dimensional phenomenon. But that means the M2 brain is not living in a closed manifold. It's living in a manifold with a boundary to it. In this case, the M5 brain. And Witten was remarking that that's similar to the situation one finds in condensed matter, where the superconductor in 3 plus 1 dimensions has a boundary which is divided into two parts. And this is his speculation, that this condensed matter configuration and the M-theory configuration may be described by the same mathematics. Whether there's any deep physical connection, I don't know. But I told you as much as I know about this connection. I got it from Witten's talk on the internet that he gave just on Monday.
Excuse me, when you say possibly because half of the boundary is in contact with some other material, what do you mean by some other material?
Well, presumably the superconductor is not composed of a single substance. It has different substances, and where the boundaries on which they meet is what he's referring to.
But they should know what is the other material. I mean, they do it.
Oh, I'm sure the condensed matter theorists could, experimentalists could tell you what these substances are. I can't.
Excuse me. My question was, why did he call it a superconductor? Well, why exactly a superconductor?
That's a good question. The reason why I mentioned superconductors in my talk was my duty was to tell you about Majorana fermions. And according to the condensed matter people, the way in which you can, under normal circumstances, you would not expect to find a Majorana fermion at all, because you can have electrons, you can have holes, you can have Cooper pairs, you can have bound states, but why would you see a Majorana particle? And according to literature I quoted, the way you might be able to see it is in the superconductor. So that was the context in which superconductivity entered the discussion. Where would you find in condensed matter physics a particle that's the same as its antiparticle?
Okay, thank you.
Was there more questions?
Oh. Sokolov.
I should repeat, in case it's not already obvious, what I said this morning, that I'm not a condensed matter physicist. My duty was to report, and I did it to the best of my ability. But if you want to ask me something about M-theory, I'd be happier to ask questions on that.
Okay, I'm Anton Sokolov from MSU Moscow. So I have a question about the measure of entanglement. You've mentioned the measure tau AB, and, which is calculated as a determinant. And then the non-locality measure is CHSH game. And also there is a measure of entanglement as for Neumann entanglement entropy. And what is the difference between these different measures of entanglement and non-locality?
I didn't hear that very clearly. Could someone repeat? Repeat for me?
So you've mentioned the tau AB as a measure of entanglement, and it was one for Bell state.
What was the letter?
Tau. It was written on the slide. Yes.
Now I recall. Yes. Okay. Very good. Just a moment.
And it was zero for separable state, and so.
Yes. Yeah. Fine. I apologize. Tau AB. Yes. Please go ahead now.
Okay, and then you've mentioned also the non-locality measure as the winning in the CHSH game.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the difference between these measures?
Okay, so let's just talk about ordinary bits. Forget cute super bits for a moment. With two bits is the first time you can exhibit the phenomenon of entanglement, and it occurs when the state is not separable, and the criterion for it being non-separable is that the determinant of this 2x2 matrix should be non-zero.
Mm-hmm.
So the determinant is a measure of how entangled the state is. And if you normalize it like this, it lies between 0 and 1, 0 being no entanglement, 1 being maximal entanglement. So if you want to play a game with Alice and Bob, so here's Alice. I'm sorry. Alice makes her measurement, Bob makes his measurement. If you want to play a game where Alice and Bob share an entangled state, then they can do better than they could if they were sharing a separable state in this game. So let me now move on to the game. And the game, the rules are quite complicated, so I won't go through them all. But there's a game which consists of a referee, Alice and Bob. And Alice and Bob are competing not against each other, but against the referee. The referee sends each of them a qubit, and they send back a qubit. But they can decide beforehand some strategy between themselves of how they will respond. And if they share an entangled state, they can score better than they could otherwise. And Tyrrellson proved that there's a maximum probability that quantum mechanics, beyond which quantum mechanics as we know it, cannot exceed, and this is the so-called Tyrrellson bound. So ordinary quantum mechanics, that's as good as you can get for bipartite entanglement, playing this game with the appropriate rules. Now, the quantum information theorists have invented what they call black boxes, which correspond to some as yet undiscovered theory, which may or may not exist in even which could do better than ordinary quantum mechanics. And they list what kind of properties such a theory would need, and so on. But you're bound by one, which is you can't go faster than light, you can't violate causality. And so there's this nether region between the quantum world that we know and this hypothetical perfect world. And the question we asked ourselves is whether superqubits could be better than ordinary qubits when you play this game, which in some sense means there's more non-locality than ordinary quantum mechanics. More non-locality than ordinary quantum mechanics.
Now, okay, think.
Okay.
Yeah. Bello?
Hello. My name is Pavel Belov from St. Petersburg State University. So, you, as far as I understood, you said that the degenerated states of some superconductor or semiconductor are associated with Majorana fermions. I know that there are semiconductors or superconductors with degenerated valence bands or something like that. So, and do you mean that this degenerated valence band, so namely the degenerated states of the quasi-particle hole, which is whole, are associated with Majorana fermion or fermions, or somehow related to Majorana fermions? Thank you.
Well, from my reading of the literature, which is very confusing, there are two different stories, depending on whether you're in one-dimensional systems or higher than one-dimensional systems. For example, Witten was talking about real Majorana fermions, which obey Fermi statistics and were of the kind that Majorana had in mind. But those, as far as I know, do not have any application to quantum computing. I may be wrong on that, but that's the story I'm getting from the literature. The systems where that do have application to quantum computing, there are quantities which in the literature are referred to as Majorana fermions, but they're not fermions at all. They're one-dimensional quantities, and in one dimension, we don't have Fermi statistics. In fact, they obey this anionic statistics, which is intermediary between Bose and Fermi. They neither commute nor anti-commute. But in order to do the trick they want, it has to be a non-abelian anion. So it's even more complicated than the usual anion. But either way, they're not fermions in a way that a particle physicist would understand the word fermion. A better description would be Majorana zero modes. And the reason for using Majorana at all in that context is because they are their own antiparticle. But they're not fermions.
Thanks.
Salah?
It's Adel Salak of Kyiv State University. My question is about the measure of entanglement. In the case of the two particles, yeah, so the measure of entanglement was the determinant. While for the three particles, we have the hyperdeterminant. So if the determinant is zero, does that imply that the state is not entangled, even in the case of the hyperdeterminant? Yep. So we have the determinant as a measure of entanglement. If it's zero, then the state is not entangled, and separable, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. Now, if we move on to the free particles, we have the hyperdeterminant. If it is equal to zero, then does that imply that the state is also separable?
Yes, very good question. In the case of two qubits, that's either yes or no. The state is either entangled or it's not. End of story. For three qubits, it's more complicated, but also more interesting, because with Alice, Bob, and Charlie, you can either have A-B-C, which is separable, or you could have A-B-C, which means Alice is entangled with Bob, but not with Charlie. And there are three of those. And then you can have ABC, which is genuine three-way entanglement. And it turns out there's two ways of having genuine three-way entanglement. One is called the W state. And an example of that would be 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1, 1. No, I'm sorry, that's not the one I had in mind. It's 0, 0, 1 plus 0, 1, 0 plus 0, 0, 1. It's not separable, so it's entangled. But there's another state, which is called a GHZ state, Greenhorn-Seiliger state, of which an example would be 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1, 1. That's also entangled, but in a different way. And it's only the GHZ states for which the hyperdeterminant is non-zero. For the first kind of state, which are called W states, there's still three-way entanglement, but the hyperdeterminant vanishes. So they fall into different classes according to whether the there's bipartite entanglement or one of the two kinds of three-way entanglements.
So the hyperdeterminant isn't like really enough to determine entanglement, right?
I'm sorry?
So the hyperdeterminant isn't sufficient to determine entanglement in the three...
Yes, you need more. There's more than one invariant you have to worry about.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I see. Thanks.
Incidentally, this is not to do with my... this is not to do with my talk, but it's a point of interest. We found some analogies between these black hole entanglement measures and black hole entropies. It turns out there's a certain black hole in string theory whose entropy is given by Cayley's hyperdeterminant. And there are lots of other interesting coincidences where the same mathematics that appears in quantum information theory appears in black hole physics. So we asked ourselves the question, how do four qubits get entangled? How many ways are there of entangling four qubits? And we looked... All the mathematics had already been done for us by the black hole people. All we had to do was translate it into the right language. And it turns out there are 31 ways of entangling the particular black holes that we needed. And so we predict that there are 31 ways of different ways of entangling four qubits. So that was in a case of using string theory to make a prediction which, in principle, is testable in the laboratory, but I don't know how easy it would be.
Professor Minkowski?
You gave an action in three dimensions. 1 plus 2, just nearby, near this formula. Could you show this, just the slide again?
And
I equal integral d3x psi bar I d slash.
Yes, I think Rick was thinking of three space
things. Now, I'm not completely sure whether you mean by this a normal three-dimensional, 1 plus 2-dimensional field theory.
I think Witten was thinking of three spatial dimensions when he wrote that.
And then it has Majorana fermion modes, I suppose. And you were referring that this action is real but not positive and things like that. But can it still be compared with the same type of fields in four dimensions where things are completely clear in the quadratic approximation?
Well, if I'm just thinking, if I took a time-independent four-dimensional Majorana spinner, I'd get the same action that Witten had. integrated over time.
Okay. I'm not sure. Let me make it more precise. Do you think that I could solve this three-dimensional system in a few minutes or a few hours tonight? Like I do within four dimensions.
Why not? What's the problem?
Yeah, okay. So then we speak of the same thing. Very good. Thank you.
Okay, we run out of time, so last question from Chen.
Yeah, hi, I'm Chen Chen from the University of Tokyo. Sorry, I tried to be short. Could we go back to the CHSH game again?
Go back to?
The CHSH type game. The I think it's next slide.
Back? Oh, the game.
Next. Okay, super next. Okay, here. So I want to understand the essence of the enhancement of maximum correlation of the super qubit, because as far as I understand, if we compare the quantum and classical, the advantage of the quantum dynamic quantum mechanics is the existence of interference.
And the existence of what?
Interference.
Yes.
And I think I understand the upper limit for the quantum mechanics is set by the conservation law of probability, and seemingly it has nothing to do with some statistics. So I'm just wondering why this supercubic can enhance this maximum correlation, and then what is the essence?
Well,
thanks.
You remember I said that the answer you get in the super case depends on how you extract real probabilities from mm-hmm. Grassmann analysis.
Ah, okay.
Uh-huh. And the rule book hasn't been written for that. But if you look in the literature, you can find at least two rules. One is the one in Bryce DeWitt's book on super Hilbert spaces, and the other one is by Alice Rogers' choice of norm. In DeWitt's norm, you don't exceed the bound. You get back the usual quantum mechanics answer. So it's consistent, but it's not very interesting from that point of view. If you adopt the Rogers norm, or what we call the modified Rogers norm, to make it compatible with the OSP 2.1, that's when it gets more interesting.
But there's a price to pay, and that is, although the individual probabilities add up to 1, which is good, the individual probabilities do not lie between 0 and 1.
Mm-hmm.
Now, various theorists like Jim Hartle have tried to make sense of quantum mechanics with such probabilities, but whether you can make sense of them in this context is an interesting question I don't have the answer to.
Thanks, man. And sorry, I have one more, maybe a little bit more stupid question. So if you go back to three slides before it. So there should be some... Yes, it's fine with this line. So,
more?
If you look at the second equation... No, sorry.
Which one did you want?
One before, maybe. And do you have some equation which has the superposed state of superqubit and normal qubit?
Super. You want the super case?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, this one. Okay. For example, in the second equation, to me it looks like the superposition between the ordinary qubits and super qubits. But do you think these have the same quantum number? Because otherwise, it doesn't allow to superpose. I think.
You want to know. If these are the same as these?
No, so my question is that in the second equation, second bracket, second cat, So can the qubit cat and can the qubit cat and the supercubic cat can superpose?
Yes, because this is anti-commutative. These are all bosons. This is the fermion. This is a fermion. So,
and
this is a sum of three bosons.
And can they?
And under the supersymmetry, this fermion coefficient rotates. Mm-hmm.
Because they have different quantum number, right? So the black dot cats and.
Yes, this is. These commute. These anti-commute.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if they can interfere each other.
Well,
yeah, because they have different quantum numbers, so I don't know.
There's a two-qubit state. You can see how it could be entangled.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not a product, then we find that the corresponding. It would be easier to wear the earpiece, wouldn't it? You can find that the corresponding bipartite entanglement measure, which is the superdeterminant of this 3x3 supermatrix, is non-zero when the state is not separable, and it's zero when it's separable. So the same, from the entanglement point of view, it all goes mm-hmm. through very nicely. The supersymmetric case mimics the bosonic case, and it's as you would expect. It's the problem comes in giving a physical interpretation to what these Grassmannian amplitudes might mean.
Okay, thanks. I will think more.
I apologize for the microphone.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you very much. We are running late, but very nice talk.